Hello, and welcome to Media Ministry at Holden Village. Today's date is July 23, 2004. Today's session number is CAJ 2004-05. Today's speaker is Joyce Caldwell. The lesson for today is Summoning Out What We Shall Be, Parables of God's People, Knowing Your Neighbor. Let's listen in.
And if anyone wasn't here the prior couple of sessions, some of the parables that I've been using are in the study guide regarding bridges, needing, building, crossing, which is in the bookstore. So if you want to take some ideas home to your congregation, it's written as a leader's guide, participant book, with information to order it from Lutheran Human Relations to get participant books, additional copies, and it's a sixth session that walks you through using some of the parables and then discussion about where in the congregation are those places where bridges are needed and where people need to enter into community in a deeper way. Regarding bridges, and needing, building, crossing, regarding as in honoring, esteeming, that kind of regard for bridges. How do we regard those people who are bridges in our life? How do we regard, to honor, esteem those places that are places of bridging? So that's a resource for you to take home and use. Purchase first would be good.
Not a souvenir.
Right. And the other resource I noted the other day is the cover will look something like this: Troubling the Waters for Healing the Church, A Journey for White Christians from Privilege to Partnership. And again, uses biblical story as the reference, and a number of the other parables are in here to be able to look at what it means to be white within the church and what is that journey that white Christians need to take in order to look at issues of privilege, in order to move into more authentic partnership within the larger church. And that's a year-long study, and again, leader's guide and participant book, so with your experience, knowledge, wisdom, hopefully can lead in your congregation. That will be coming out through Augsburg Fortress in fall, we hope.
Are these under the auspices then of LCHR or not?
Under
LHRA, what all the letters are.
Yeah. And if you don't know about Lutheran Human Relations, I do have a couple of brochures, and Vanguards are actually in the Resource Center over there, which I've seen. And Lutheran Human Relations is a national, independent, pan-Lutheran organization that was established in 1953 to address issues of racism within the church, Lutheran Church Missouri Synod at that time, but because it's looked through the years at the interconnection of oppression, became more connected with the ELCA around issues of ordination of women and other issues. And if any of you are interested, I was the director there for 12 years, resigned 2 years ago, but still work with them and doing a lot of the training. So this resource was written when I was director of Lutheran Human Relations.
Sounds like familiar.
Yeah. I was executive director for 12 years there. And this resource I wrote for the ELCA, so it's coming out through the ELCA.
I had a question about this new one coming up. Now it's 18 sessions, starts with Advent and ends with Pentecost. That's, I'm trying to think, is that all the year?
That's the whole year.
Yeah, because then you don't go through the Trinity and all that.
Well, it goes all the way through the season of Pentecost, through the summer and fall, up to the season of Advent again.
So it's not 18 weeks, it's 18 sessions.
It's 18 sessions that are spread out throughout the whole year. And tonight, for those of you who will still be here tonight, we're showing the movie Color of Fear. Some of you have not heard of it. It's a powerful movie, if you have. It's a good movie to watch, and we'll have a discussion after that Jane and I will be here to facilitate. So 8:30 in here, right?
Yes.
So if you're here, try to make that. Okay, we'll get started for the sake of time. I'm Joyce Caldwell, and we're looking at parables, and today we're looking at the parable of the Good Samaritan, and the theme for today is knowing our neighbor. And this is another parable that I would expect most people, or all people in this room, have heard. Parable of the Good Samaritan we hear all the time, and we talk about the Good Samaritan, we even have Good Samaritan laws. So it's a well-known parable, and we're going to try to again look at this parable with some new lenses, some new eyes, kind of a new way of looking at this parable. The parable begins with a conversation between Jesus and a lawyer. And a lawyer in Jesus' time was one who knew all of the laws of the Book of Moses, the Torah, and who tried to apply those laws to daily living. And his background would be trying to assess what it means to be God's people in that time and in the age to come in keeping the ritual requirements, all of the moral and ritual requirements. So this passage begins with a conversation between Jesus and the lawyer. So I invite you to turn to Luke chapter 10. And first, we'll just read that conversation between Jesus and the lawyer. Luke chapter 10, and the first conversation is verses 25 through 29. And if someone would like to read verses 25 through 29 of Luke 10.
And behold, a lawyer stood up to put him to the test, saying, Teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life? He said to him, What is written in the law? How do you read? And he answered, You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your strength, and with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself. And he said to him, You have answered right. Do this, and you will live. But he, desiring to justify himself, said to Jesus, And who is my neighbor?
Okay. Jesus, we'll stop right there. That's the question. He wants to know. He knows all of the laws. And he knows that to get into God's kingdom, he must keep the laws, and he wants to know which one is kind of the most important. He wants to get this figured out and to justify himself. He says, and who is my neighbor? So, to answer this question, and who is my neighbor, I want to have you get into groups of five. So if you can gather into a group of about five people, hopefully five. Four could also work. Yeah, I'll give you more instructions.
Who's the major, huh?
Okay, how about if we have you extra here and extra here? If somebody would come and form a circle over here. I think it's all the time. one to five within your group?
One.
Okay, you've got six in your group? Okay, anybody else have six, or is that the only one with six? Okay. Number one in your group. You are the traveler. And as the traveler, you don't really have any identification of who you are. So you're just the traveler who, and that's how you will be listening to the story. You were going from Jerusalem to Jericho, you're attacked, you're left by the side of the road. Number twos, you are the priest. And as a priest, you are an Israelite. And as a priest, you have been set aside and have become ritually clean in order to perform the services for God in the temple or the tabernacle in the synagogue. And you need to remain ritually clean in order to do your work. If you touch a corpse, you are unclean and you cannot do your work in the temple or the synagogue again for another 7 days until you've gone through all of the ritual cleansing. So there are some strict rules about what you can and can't do. And as a priest, you're supposed to be both a teacher and a living example of God. Okay, Levite. Number threes, you are a Levite. A Levite is also an Israelite. You are of the tribe of Levi, and so within the tribe of Levi, different clans or families have different assigned tasks within the temple. So that's, you also are from that holy tradition. Your job, your work is within the temple or the synagogue, and you're in charge of taking care of a certain part of the tabernacle. And you also, as a Levite, have to be set aside through a special ceremony of sacrifice and cleansing to do your work. And so you also are to remain clean in body and mind in order to do your work. Number fours, you are the Samaritan. As a Samaritan, you are hated by the Jews. They will basically do anything to go out of their way to not come in contact with you. They'll walk by you. You are one of the, you follow most of the laws of the first five books of Moses, but you are some of the people either who intermarried with other Canaanites when the 10 northern tribes were taken into captivity, or you've been people who have come into that, so you don't really fit. You're not pure like the Israelites. And so you're sort of a mixed race group of people, and people, the Jews will go out of their way to avoid you. And number fives, you are the innkeeper. There's also no identification of you, but your role is, you have a role in the story. So you're part of this story. And in this group that's number six, that of six, number six, you're the robber. You're a collective robbers. So I want you, and a setting for this story, and this is really kind of helpful here in this setting, on the height of the terrain, that the traveler in your group, and obviously the other people who encounter him, are on the road from Jerusalem to Jericho. And Jerusalem, some of you who've been in the Holy Land would know this road better than I do, but Jerusalem is on a ridge about 2,500 feet above sea level. And Jericho is 20 miles along the road, 1,300 feet below sea level. So that's a 3,800 foot drop. That's more than the climb to Holden Lake. So that gives a perspective of the hilliness of this terrain. And it's all rocky, barren ground in that whole road. So not a pleasant place to walk. So you can kind of use that picture in this traveling along the way. So in your role now, listen to the story. And picture yourself. Follow along, or if you want to picture in your mind with your eyes closed, however it's easiest for you to picture who you are now in this story. In reply to the lawyer's question, Jesus says, "A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho and fell into the hands of robbers who stripped him, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. Now by chance, a priest was going down that road, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. So likewise a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, while traveling, came near him, and when he saw him, he was moved with pity. He went to him and bandaged his wounds, having poured oil and wine on them. Then he put him on his own animal, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. The next day he took out 2 denarii, gave them to the innkeeper, and said, 'Take care of him, and when I come back, I will repay you whatever more you spend.' Which of these do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of the robbers?" And the lawyer said, "The one who showed him mercy." Jesus said to him, "Go and do likewise." So in your small group, I want you to talk with one another within your role and to consider, you know, how do you see yourself? How do you see the others in the story? What drove you to act the way you did? And just kind of share that with one another in your group. Be your character.
I'm not To do, and besides, if I were kept off my duties for a whole week, how can I, that's a whole week, and I've got important, I have to conduct services, I can't be bothered with this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I had to weigh that, and then my responsibilities were for those tasks that I had for the week, and to care for this person laying on the side of the road, would just have destroyed my week, and all those important things I have to do.
Mm-hmm. And I did well in the rabbinical seminary, and my professors didn't do this kind of thing.
Are there still Jewish priests that are acting this role that are today in Israel or Jerusalem? They're still think they're so above everybody else that it's okay to kill the Palestinians and steal the Romans. They're still thinking the same way.
Yeah, that's one I don't know enough about the current.
Yeah, they despise anybody that's not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was worried because I've heard that people do this, you know. They pretend to be dead on the side of the road or to be just to get my goods. And I had my beautiful crop, my beautiful jewels and things on that I was taking to temple, and I was not going to try to get taken into that.
Mm-hmm. I struggled a little bit there, but actually there's tons of rules, regulations, customs, and traditions that just keep me going.
Okay.
To be honest, I really didn't even particularly notice the person. The way I serve is to do my rabbinic responsibility. It wouldn't be rabbinic because that didn't exist then, but to do my priestly responsibilities.
Mm-hmm. I was focused on God.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's a dangerous road. You see people all the time. If I stopped every time, I'd never get my duties done.
Okay. Levites.
Well, I would walk by because I would have thought I would have to go back up to Jerusalem probably to spend 7 days, another 7 days to get clean again. And maybe I would say to myself, when I get to Jericho, I'll send somebody. Maybe.
Mm-hmm. Maybe. Cell phone doesn't work out there.
Well, I didn't even know who this person was. I mean, it could have been a Samaritan for all I know. And I also know this area, and the area is just rife with robbers, and there's lots of places for him to hide. And so I knew he was very sick and very hurt, but I thought probably there were other robbers who could have been hiding around there. And I have a lot of responsibilities. I have a family to take care of. I have a calling, and it just would have been more important for me to continue with that calling, and hopefully somebody else would come by who's the class if you didn't hear of that.
Okay. Yeah. Well, as a good Levite, I have grown up with the idea that we don't do that type of thing. I don't really know why it's against our principles to do that, but I know that I'm not supposed to do that. And I think that there may be some Levites coming behind me that they might see that I'm breaking one of our rules, and I would certainly hate to have them think that I wasn't upholding my station in life. Mm-hmm.
You know, I was really wrestling with a gnarly theological question, and I thought I went home to my family and we'd want dinner, and they needed me, and I didn't have time to stop. I needed to kind of work out this question before I got home and all this stuff.
Right, and I actually saw the priest walk by this person, so if the priest isn't going to stop him, why should I?
Any other Levites?
I was kind of like the priest up there. I felt that I think that I maybe just kind of noticed him out the corner of my eye, but kept on going because I was focused on whatever had my focus at that moment.
Okay. Innkeepers. What were you doing? What was your role?
Well, I was thinking about the risks of taking this person in, and maybe my beds in the whole, my inn would be unclean, and nobody would come to my place anymore, so I had to weigh that, but I guess I was pretty compassionate, because the scripture says I did take him in, and I kept him for a few days and was paid later, so I think that the innkeeper was compassionate and wanted to help.
Or you wanted the money.
I was amazed by the generosity of this Samaritan, and I wasn't even sure what I thought about that, if I approved of it. But the Samaritan was giving me this money, so I figured, yeah, I'll take the money.
Yeah, it's a business. I mean, as long as I can gain income, I'll provide the service. Simple as that. I'm not being reimbursed. I can't afford the loss of the revenue, and it would be the way it is.
I thought this credit card.
Any other innkeepers? Okay, let's hear from the one robber.
Well, it's an easy take. And she had this beautiful robe on, and so I just wanted it.
Okay. Samaritan.
I think you're being too hard on all the other characters. I think the Samaritan, I'm the only one who can approach this person in need. And I don't know that all the others didn't feel compassion either, but they were restricted and fearful that whatever they did might complicate their lives. I was the freest because I could do what I wanted to do with no danger of the unknown. I don't know who this man is. He may have been a Levite. He may have been a priest. It doesn't say who he is. But if I don't know, and if I'm a Levite, I have to take a risk. And if I'm a priest, and I've got other things that may delay me, I may have to take a risk. It was easy. And I don't know that by saying that I'm a good guy, I'm any better of a good guy than the others. It's just that I was freer to do it, because where I was.
Mm-hmm. But as a Samaritan, I was also scared, because if this was a Jewish person laying there, they really didn't want me touching them either. because I was grouped as far as they were concerned. And we followed a lot of the same laws that the Jewish people did, even though we lived on the other side.
Other Samaritans.
I just knew he needed help, so it was something I felt absolutely necessary or necessary to do. It didn't matter. I didn't see the priest and the Levite their way ahead of me, so. I just knew he needed help and gave him the help.
And he wouldn't contribute, gave him help.
I, as being something of an outcast myself, and the Jewish people are identified with this person who was had been robbed and was sort of an outcast, and I had this sense of identity with that person, wanting to help him because he was, you know, being put upon as I felt myself being put upon. I had this sense of compassion for him, acted out of that sense of compassion, understanding.
As a Samaritan, I had been helped a few times along the way in situations, and I just was thankful that I then could return the favor. And no one knew me when they helped me, and so I don't know this person, so I had the opportunity then to pay back and reach out.
Travelers. How is it to be the traveler?
Okay, traveler. I went from being frustrated to then just being mad that for these people who were supposed to be a living example of God were just walking right by me. So I went from feeling sort of despondent and frustrated to just getting really angry watching these people go by me.
Someone here in our group suggested I use a cell phone.
The robbers took it.
I was in the wrong area for it to work.
Other travelers.
Well, I'm in such bad shape I didn't notice anybody else walking by, but I sure am grateful to the Samaritan, and I know that if I ever get the chance to repay this kind deed, I will surely do that when I recover.
For me, I didn't care at that point. It's a matter of life and death. I didn't care if you were a Jew or a priest or a Levite or what you were. I just wanted somebody to help me.
I was too weak to call out, but I could see the two walk by ahead. And then when the Samaritan finally stopped, I was so relieved and so grateful to be handled with care and compassion and to just release myself into their care.
Any other travelers?
I guess I was, you know, not expecting anything from anybody. You know, I was just going along minding my own business, and then this happened, and no, I'm not sure I would have helped these other people if they were in my position. So I learned a lesson from this.
Okay. Well, we're going to take this text to another level, see what other lessons are in it. And I'll hand out that. I think there's six copies. What you will be doing is looking at this parable with another set of questions, and I printed them out for today. The first question on here you can start to talk about is, with whom do you most identify in the text? Do you identify the traveler, the Samaritan, the priest, the Levite, the innkeeper, the robbers? So think about who you identify with in the text. And then how do you see
you mean originally, before we did their sessions?
That you're moving out of your role now.
Yep.
Yeah, so moving out of your role of who you were, talk about the text. And think about who you might identify with. After you've heard all of these voices from the different people, you know, who might you identify with? How do you see prejudices, cultural practices, and institutional policies
as factors in how this has played out. You mentioned a number of those things, of some prejudice and practices. Think about why Jesus so specifically named the person a Samaritan. And the challenge, both the lawyer and for us, when he wanted to justify himself. And what are those challenges for us? What challenges was Jesus giving the lawyer? And then if you have time, consider the last one. Jesus knew that the lawyer and the other Jews who were listening likely would have found it too distasteful to identify with the Samaritan in the story. Note the lawyer cannot even say the name Samaritan. He says, when Jesus asks who his neighbor, he replies, the one who showed him mercy. He does not say the Samaritan. The listeners would not have wanted to be like the priest or the Levite. So that leaves the hearer identifying with the man in the ditch. And what does it mean to be the man in the ditch? And what challenges does that raise in you? And from whom do you need support and healing? And I'm only going to give you about 10 minutes for these, so this is another piece you can ponder on all day, but at least get started on the discussion.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
Commandments, God's poverty plan, and said that a Christian in this instance is the one who goes beyond. So the lawyer in this instance, it seems to me, was working from God's poverty plan, just the legalism stuff. And Christ was encouraging him to go beyond being legalistic and being compassionate and serving.
Okay. I got to speak to a lawyer. I think he's getting a bad deal. I think the lawyer loved the law, and I think he loved God, and I think he saw that it's only by enforcing the law and living by the law that has come from God that one has to do that. I don't think he's this arrogant jerk that's trying to trick him. I don't think he's trying to trick him. I think he's now got a dilemma. Because all of a sudden now, here's the law. And most lawyers and judges don't change the law, but we interpret it and we scrape it and we mold it. And I think he's got a dilemma because now all of a sudden he's got his law and God's word that he loves and he can't change the law. But he's in a position where he may be able to tell a story
or he may be in a position where he can move it a little bit, but certainly the neighbor can't be the leper. Certainly the neighbor, you can't go that far. Certainly the neighbor can't be the Samaritan. You can't go that far. So there's got to be somewhere in between that you can define neighbor. And I think he's actually asking, help me, give me an argument where I can get, where I can move an inch. And maybe I'm overly sensitive, but I don't think you have to read all these characters as bad people. I think they're, for the most part, they are good people who love God, and in their own, whether it's the priest or the Levite or the lawyer, they are trying to communicate, and but they're wedged in with black and white, we used to call black letter law, and so I don't know, I'll shut up.
I have the head knowledge, but not the heart.
I pick up on this. In terms of identifying with people in this, I think it's easier to identify. I'm a pastor, but it's easier for me to identify with a lawyer. And the tendency for us to want to know that we're doing the right thing, mm-hmm. to know that we're good, to justify ourselves. I mean, that's a classic pattern for many, many people, just to try to justify ourselves and to ask the question in such a way. You want to know you're doing the right thing and doing well. And so I would really affirm what Les has said here in terms people aren't bad people.
Right. Yeah, and I think that's really the gift of the parables, that it's not set up to be good or bad. It's really that challenge that I can be all of those people. Yeah. And it's finding myself in that piece of each of them in myself to say, okay, where is that challenge then in me? Because we are all of them, I think, at times.
One of the things that we were talking about, I mentioned when my kids were little, that I was with a friend in the car, and there were four kids total, all about the same age, and we saw the panhandler out there with his sign and all that, and drove on by, and every one of those four kids said, what about the Good Samaritan? Why didn't you stop, etc.? So we gave them a lot, we give money to Faith Mission, and we worked out in the food pantry, and this whole bit, and they said, but you still didn't help him. Well, my grandson just recently, as we were working the food bank, was saying, Mama keeps a bunch of granola bars and different kinds of fast food type things in the car. And whenever we see somebody like that, she opens a window and offers this to them, and they either say yes or no, depending on what their needs were. So that's just one area. But, I mean, we're still struggling with this.
Oh, yeah.
Because good stewardship says, you know, go down to Faith Mission, here's my card. I also don't know, they may not be able to read that card. So it's a real struggle today.
It's huge. Huge dilemma.
She had said, well, I kind of know this area really has a lot of trouble, and kind of, you know, so I really don't know if I should help. Well, often in our lives, we can find ourselves just retreating from having succeeded, and just put the blinders on and get yourself to a place where you you don't have to look eye to eye with somebody that that has those needs.
Mm-hmm. There was much rich conversation, and I would like to keep a lot of this going, but time's going to run out. So I want to just give you another tool and another lens to look at some of these issues. And on the other handout, well, on the back side of the questions, if you were in here earlier this week, was the making of an ism piece. If you weren't, you could talk to someone about it. Just on the handout with the levels of racism or any of the levels of oppression, just the intersection and the interweaving of all of the institutional, cultural, and individual levels. And we don't have time to talk about and play those all out, but it is that sense of understanding how oppression works at all of those levels, with individual prejudices, attitudes, and behaviors, but the cultural norms that we saw for the priest and the Levite, and the institutional norms of all of the laws. And so all of those levels are
at play in this parable and recognizing how they determine our actions in our lives. And they definitely helped to determine the Levite and the priest's actions and how they saw things. And we still get caught in those systems very deeply. On the other side, dissecting the cultural pyramid, and I want to just real briefly run through that because that is the place that we need in our places of congregations, churches, even work settings. That question of where does culture get in the way of who we are called to be as church? Where are some of those institutional practices and cultures getting in the way? And so look at that as the pyramid, and we'll just look through in those three levels of the what, how, and why. Most often when we talk about culture, we look at that top level of what. And so we have, you know, ethnic potluck meals at our churches, or we have some ethnic festivals. In Milwaukee as a city, we have an ethnic festival every week beginning with Asian Moon in June and Indian Summer in September, and every single weekend is a different ethnic festival. So you go through, every identity in the city has their weekend, and so you can go to that festival and eat the food, see the dances, buy the jewelry or the artwork, and so it's kind of that level of what. And many people want to enter into cultures and get a piece of that, you know. Bring the music into our churches, congregations, buy some artwork, hang some different things on our walls, and then say, we're a multicultural church. Or hire one person who is of a different cultural background, or speak the language and say, we're a multicultural church. Well, that can happen, but we need to look farther down, because when we say that and try to do that, if you look at this as an iceberg or a pyramid, and we're trying to do that multicultural thing on the top, well, we start to get close, and all that bottom stuff bumps against each other before we can get close on that top stuff. So we have to look farther down at that how level of how do we do things. When we start to know how a culture functions and how it operates, we start to get to know more of the culture, that we know how to get through life. It's the how do I greet people? How do we raise our children? How do we treat our elders? How do we see the roles of men and women? How do I express emotions? How do I think about thinking? It's kind of that whole level of how. And it's that level, if we're in a culture, that I can go on automatic pilot and say, I mean, I can get to work and I'll have, like, how did I get here? I mean, even forgetting, you know, all the sights and sounds along the way because it's so familiar that I'm not even aware of how I'm getting through the day. And for me, the biggest aha of all of that was spending 6 weeks in Africa without any of my culture around, and I had to be awake, you know, constantly, 24 hours a day. I never knew, you know, how to get up in the morning, how to go about, you know, washing, how to greet children, how to greet parents, how to bring greetings from my synod, how to say enough when I had enough food. I mean, there was nothing that I knew how to do. It's just that unconsciousness that we have that is our culture. And then the deepest part is getting, it, when we start to really know a culture, it's getting to that value system that gives rise to everything else. And so when we want to work within our churches and congregations in understanding and becoming multicultural, we have to unpack for people the value system. Because when we start to look at even changing some music, what we're really doing is really going deep down into a value system. And people can feel deeply threatened when we're starting to question values. And so the conversation has to be very deep and very authentic to say, why are we doing this? What is the value that underlies all of that? So very briefly, looking up from that, and you can take this, Well, as long as the tool to think about it. On the bottom are our spectrum, and again, don't think of these as either ors because it's not that. It's all along a spectrum, and even people within a culture will be all along the spectrum, but it tends to be within white-dominant U.S. society that the values on the left-hand side more often are the values that give rise to how we operate. That within our society, there's a sense, white-dominant society, there is someone who can hold the truth. There is a holder of the truth. And that gives rise as we go up to hierarchies, that there's someone who knows more, someone who has the answers, which goes all the way up to, and also goes into the written word, that if we write it, it must be true. And so we've got lots of books. We have a high sense of value in the society of individualism, which also moves up through the hierarchies, suits, uniforms, so we know exactly who someone is by their level of who should we be talking to, because maybe they have the collar on, or if they have the suit in the hotel, we'll know to talk to that person as a manager to complain to rather than the person with the maid's uniform on. So there's clear delineation of who people are. Through that individualism, we have schools, you know, courses that you know people move through individually. Linear ways of moving from left to right, so everything is structured in an order. We have to move through curriculum in a certain way and go through a certain thing and accomplish a certain thing before we do the next. We value mind in the Western U.S. dominant society, so we have to be able to think it. If we can think it, explain it with lots of good reasons, then it's true. If I intuit it or just think it, just feels right, well, that won't really work. I have to figure out how to explain it. And that goes all the way on up. And time is money. Time is precious. We don't want to waste time. We have to move through things quickly. We have agendas. We don't want to spend more than an hour in worship. We start and end on time. We have to move through things, time quickly, so we have fast food, highways, so we don't really have to look around or get into relationship and talk too much because our time is precious, and we have to get there quickly. So it's those kind of values that move through, and so we have to be able to dissect, you know, what is that value, and is that the value that is the best in that particular setting. And again, all values, all different ways of doing things can be good. And it's like you said, this isn't a good or a bad. It's that discerning, where is there a challenge? Is, in that particular time and place, a cultural practice or norm or value getting in the way of being church together? And recognizing that someone else who comes in with a very different pyramid, different value structure, different values, different practices, and different expressions of it. And so understanding and working to be a multicultural church, understanding how much all of this is operating and how much work it takes to listen and to see, to understand where are my priests, where are my Levite, where are my cultural practices getting in the way, who am I seeing by the side of the road or not seeing. So, go with God, go in peace, enjoy the day.
Thank you.